Hello, welcome to the Girl and Duck podcast. I'm Jen Storer, acclaimed children's book author and chief inspirationalist. That's not a term I made up. At girlandduck.com, creative writing, creative life. At Girl and Duck, I take you on a journey from exploring the art of kidlit creation right through to mastering the art of kidlit creation. To find out more about the courses and products that I offer, pop over to the website. You're bound to find inspiration and support and something to absolutely love over there. That's www.girlandduck.com. But in the meantime, stick around because we've got lots to talk about. It's kind of a crazy day here today in terms of it's spring, you know. So it's windy, it's cold, it's warm. There's a threat of rain, there's blue sky. It's like everything's going on in one day, and that's what it's been like for a while. But this morning I had yoga, and often at the beginning of our yoga class, our teacher will suggest that we dedicate our practice on that particular day to someone or something, or you know, something that's going on in our life. And this morning she suggested that we dedicate our practice to spring and to what is blossoming inside of us. And I thought that was a really beautiful thing just to bring to this podcast today, even if you're not in spring, wherever you're listening from. It's still interesting to think about the things like what's blossoming in your life, you know, at this point in time. It might be a new relationship, a new friendship, a new job, a new home, a new frock, a new way of being, a new way of looking at life, a new way of how you go through life. Could be anything like that, big things, but it could also be small things that are blossoming. Small things that are blossoming in our little world, in our creative practice. What's coming through? I see more and more especially with the duck pond, the creative impulse. I see it at play all the time, and I see it, how powerful it is, how strong it is, and how much it will sustain you when you dive into it and create. For the joy of creating, not for any other reason, and allow it to lead you where it wants to lead you. And so that's kind of, I thought, a really nice thing to think about. What's blooming creatively in your life? What's trying to come through? What's trying to express through you, through your practice? And sort of bow to that and let that happen. It could also be in terms of the story that you might be working on, a story perhaps, and you want to get to a point where you can allow that story to blossom and to observe what is blossoming via your pen, via your story, or via your characters. What's blooming? What's blossoming? So that's another way of looking at your creativity, especially at this time of the year in the Southern Hemisphere, as spring is. It's all around us, and for those of us who are lucky enough to have gardens, every morning, you know, every morning when I do my matron's round, there's a new surprise. There's a new bud that's opened. There's a new bud about to open. There's a secret plant that's popping up amongst all the others. Because my approach to gardening is very much about working in unison with Mother Nature rather than trying to dictate how things should look and putting things in straight rows and, you know, edging things and cutting things and pulling things out and dictating how it's all going to work. So I love to see a jumble of close planting and seeing what comes up, you know, what literally pops up out there in that garden. So there'll be, you know, all of a sudden there's an olive tree that I planted ages ago, just randomly in amongst all these bulbs and things, and the olive tree has now got little olives on it. And, you know, there's a Manchurian pear that's sort of popped in near the lemon tree, and that's taking off. But there's one of those, we used to call them in the 70s happy plants. I think they're called, are they called yucco or yucco plants? There's one of those coming up at the base of the Manchurian pear, and that's all, they're all surrounded by irises. You know, everyone's rubbing along together and getting along. It's all about Mother Earth's green mantle, and fostering that and caring for that. So it's really interesting to see, and just stop and think about what's blossoming in your life and also what's blossoming in your creative life, and honoring that and enjoying it and fostering it and being there for it. So that's all I really wanted to say today. I'll come back again in the next few days with another podcast that might be a bit more practical. But that's where I am on this wild and woolly day. And thank goodness for yoga. We did a lot of balancing practices today because it's so windy. And our teacher said it's good to do balancing balancing postures on windy days. So a lot of us were like, you know, storks with wonky legs. But we got through. All right, sending you loads of love from HQ. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye. Hello. Hello, I'm back again. It's the next day. And I thought of something else that I wanted to share with you, which is way more practical, but might help you on an organisational front. Every now and then, in the duck pond, this is one of those things that pops up, or in office hours, this question pops up. It's one of those ones that sort of goes round and round. And it's basically, how do you organize your notes? You know, people love to share how they organize their notes and their manuscripts and their work, their WIPs, you know, their works in progress and that sort of thing. How do you keep on top of it all? And can you even keep on top of it all? For a lot of us. So I thought I would just share here how I stay on top of things, or don't, in terms of working on multiple projects at a time. And this is a very much a thing for kid-lit authors too, because there are so many categories in children's literature that you can be working on many, many things at a time. And sometimes it can get all to be a bit of a schmozzle. So I thought I'd just go through a few ideas that might help you, things that I do. So the number one thing for me always is that I always print out everything I'm working on. And I always thought that was just a normal thing, but apparently some people don't. And that really shocked me. But I print out, I always have a printout of the current manuscript, of where it's up to, whether it's a novel or whether it's a PB. I always have a printout of it because for lots of reasons. One, I don't trust my computer. I don't trust necessarily technology to store it all. And the other reason that I have printouts is because that's how I work. I'm very tactile, so I need to hold the manuscript in my hands at some point so that I can edit it and rewrite it and see problems with it and all that kind of stuff. So I'm very still much a paper girl. So I keep printouts of everything. And then from there, I have usually like a manila folder for each manuscript. And so everything relating to that manuscript, even if I've scribbled something on the back of a receipt, that will go into that manila folder along with the main manuscript, some reworkings of the manuscript, you know, research notes, all sorts of things go into that manila folder. And then, you know, it has the working title of the story scrawled across the front, and often other things scrawled across the front, because that's how it works, doesn't it? It's not so... ideas are not, it's not linear. They can take you by surprise, and sometimes you just have to scribble things down as you think of them. And so often the actual manila folders for me get things scrawled on them, which then later on will be put somewhere more formal if they're worth keeping. So that's the big, that's one of the systems that I use. So everything relating to that manuscript is all together in one manila folder. And also sometimes, but not always, but I do try to keep a separate, small notebook for each thing that I'm working on, and so that notebook will also be in there with that printout of the manuscript, and all related notes and research things and ideas will be in there as well. And I even do that for PBs. I'll have PBs, printouts of PBs kept somewhere together. So that's a sort of a practical thing that I do. And then beyond that, depending on how big the project is or how long it's going to go for, I might have a separate box. So like I'll go to a $2 shop and buy a pretty box, like a polka dot box with a green lid or something. And I will store bits and pieces relating to that story and that things that I might use. So for example, I think I've actually done a video somewhere about this, you know, where for Truly Tan, because there were 8 books in that series, so that was a big world. There was a lot of world building going on even in that series for me. And so I had a Truly Tan box that had magazines, those sort of kids magazines, like I think it was it K-Zone and I don't know, my favourite pet and all those sort of, you go to the kiddie section in the, if you don't have kids at the moment or kids aren't little anymore, you know, you go to the kiddie section in the newsagents and you find those magazines that kids are reading in that age group. And I usually would buy a couple of those and I always get ideas, you know, I'd always get craft ideas, project ideas, problem pages. Some of them have a problem page, you know, really getting into that psyche of an eight-year-old, nine-year-old, 10-year-old. And so I would keep those magazines together along with the crappy giveaways that they have taped to them. There's ideas in everything, you know, like there might be some sort of cute hair tie. I've got a fluffy hair tie, and it's pink fluff with little cat's ears on it, that was attached to one of those magazines, and that inspired something in a Truly Tan story. Jumping off points. So that sort of stuff would be kept in the Truly Tan box as well. And so then every time I went to write the next story, I would go back to the Truly Tan box and have a look in there, into the mystery box, into the mystery chest. And it even has a hinged lid, this particular box, so it's very magical. So it has all sorts of things in there that I can dive into and get the inspiration flowing again and re-enter the story world. So that's another thing that I do. I keep a collection of it's almost like memorabilia and inspiring things around each story. And I would do that. I'd do that also for things like the Crystal Bay Girls. There'd be Dolly magazines and that sort of stuff for that sort of tweeny age group and so on and so forth. It sort of relates to that anatomy of a story thing that we used to play on Facebook years and years ago, where people would put images up that were like, you know, that were sort of symbols of the story that they were working on. That was a lot of fun. And there's an idea there that you might want to use. A box of things. Now, the other thing that I always do too is not every story that you work on needs an elaborate backstory, you know. It doesn't that you need to go and have family trees and family histories and stuff like that. But some stories will require that. You will need that knowledge. And for me, with Truly Tan, when I first started writing Truly Tan, I just knew the family, basically. I didn't know much about their history or their background, you know, not going deep anyway. But when I got to, I think it was book 3, Truly Tan Freaked, where this mysterious great aunt turned up, and I had to figure out where she fit in the in the family tree and whose side of the family she came from. She ended up coming from the father's side. So I had to go and do, because of the mystery that I was creating, I had to go and do a quite an elaborate family tree going back a couple of generations just to understand where this woman sat on the tree and what had gone on before her, like what secrets she was trying to that she was holding on to, and what mystery she was actually trying to solve by suddenly turning up at the Callaghan property. And so I had to do this elaborate family tree and work out, you know, where everybody was and where they were born and what happened to their original property and yada yada yada. And so I ended up doing on an A3 piece of paper. I can't do this in the computer. Like, I just can't. I have to have this, I have to be able to see this and touch this and scribble on it. And so I have, and still have, an A3 sheet out of a big sketch pad with the family tree on it and each branch of it and the name of the different people and the years that they were born, the year they died, and all that sort of stuff. Drawn onto this piece of paper so that while I was working on this particular story, I could have that taped to the wall behind my computer and I just can access it constantly. There's just, to me, there's no point having stuff like that in the computer because it's just going to be laborious to find it every time you want it. And so that's another way that I store my notes. You know, I store my thoughts, I store my details of my story, I store them on an A3 piece of paper on the wall so I can constantly look at it, and I'm constantly in that world every time I sit down to work. And it's the same for maps. So lots of maps, you know, mud maps, you know, even maps of the actual room or the house or the kids' room, you know, where things are placed. Sometimes that is very important to the story. And so, again, I have or would have, you know, drawn these mud maps onto an A3 sheet and taped it on the wall next to my computer so I can constantly be referring to it and knowing that I'm on track I'm spatially across everything that's going on in the story. And again, that's really important for continuity and veracity, but also just the inner logic of the story as well. So that's another thing. Now, the other thing that I do and have always done from my publishing days, actually, this is something that we always did in the office. All our computers in those days were we called it networking. This was, you know, we weren't using the internet as much at the start when I first entered into publishing, but we had networked computers, and all the projects that we were working on, and they were big projects, you know, 76 little readers and this sort of stuff. We always had ZZZ folders, okay, capital Z, ZZZ folders, and anything you weren't working on was filed in ZZZ. Now, this really helps. This really helps. And I've always used that. I use that with how I run Girl and Duck. I use it with how I write. So I have a ZZZ folder for all my half-finished projects. And within that ZZZ folder, then, of course, I have subfolders. So I have, you know, triple Z PBs, triple Z junior fiction, triple Z middle grade, triple Z random ideas. Okay, things that are not currently in play. So everything's tucked away, but every now and then I'll think, oh, what, didn't I have a blah, 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 or thought about, you know, it's yada, yada. And I'll go to ZZZ and there'll be something in there that I can pull out and revisit. But it's not there in my main files cluttering up what I'm working on. So my WIPs are always separate from that. And the other thing that I use, I work in Apple and always have in Apple, yeah, is, you know, the current manuscripts always have a dot in front of them so that they're at the top of the file. So option 8 puts that dot in front of the file and then it comes up to the top in the folder. You'll know what I'm talking about. And I don't know, it probably works in a PC as well. I have no idea about anything other than Mac. I'm sorry, but that's how I do that as well. So ZZZ has been a real savior for me. So there's not a whole lot of mess. Everything's really clear. I know exactly what I'm working on at the time that I'm working on it, but I also know exactly where I can find stuff later on if I want to revisit things or go back to an old idea or start working on something that's only I've only half written or I've run out of steam on or that I still think has legs and I want to revisit it and rewrite it, it'll be in my ZZZ folder. I don't throw out anything unless it's absolutely categorically crap. Then it's gone. But, you know, most things have an inkling or a grain of something useful in them. So I'm always reluctant to throw out anything too much, be too radical. Looking at my thing here, my little list, I think that's about all. That's really how I organise my notes. And it's the same with research, of course. Research notes are, I always have notes about the manuscript that I write up in a separate file, a separate document. And then I usually print that out and handwrite on that and add more ideas and then type it up again neatly. So everything's sort of in one place. So notes on the manuscript, plot ideas might be in a separate document. Sometimes they get mixed together, but often plot ideas will be in a separate document and then that will be filed along with the main manuscript. Now, the other thing that I do, for those of you who are submitting, often when you submit a picture book, a little bit further down the track, while it's still out there in the void, you'll get better ideas for that manuscript and you'll want to work on it again. So I will save that always as the edited and the current manuscript, and keep a track of the actual manuscript that you sent to the publisher. So that's another thing that I always do, is I have a little filing system so that I always know the current version of the manuscript. I don't get in a muddle about which one am I working on. And again, I often come back to that option 8, that dot thing. But it's also a naming conventions that I use, so I know which is the current one, which is the latest version, and that sort of stuff. So I try to keep it on top of all that. And lastly, I just want to share with you something that I don't do, but a lot of emerging authors, of course, do this. Because they're submitting a lot and to a lot of different publishers. So I've heard this bandied around in my community, Excel sheets that keep track of who you've submitted to and when you submitted, because it's amazing how quickly you can forget. Oh, did I submit that to Scholastic or did I submit that to Hardy Grant? I can't remember. Did I, you know, and when did I send that one out? Right. So if you've got an Excel sheet with all that in it, you're ahead of the game because you know exactly where you're at. So as long as you keep that Excel sheet up to date, then you'll feel like you're on top of things a lot more. So there's just some ideas for you to help you keep organized and keep on top of stuff and keep from drowning in notes and ideas and notebooks as well. To tell you the truth, I have not mastered the notebook thing and I gave up. You know, I've got notebooks everywhere and I just have to learn to live with it. You know, sometimes they're dedicated to one thing, but more often than not, they've got scribbles from all sorts of thoughts and areas and stuff. And so what? Like, seriously, it doesn't matter. As long as you've caught the idea and you've caught it somewhere, that's the main thing. You will be able to find the stuff as long as you catch it. Never, never, ever, ever, ever rely on your memory. Never think, oh, that's a great idea, I won't forget that, I'll write it down when I get home, you know, in 6 hours' time. Grab it then, even if it's on a receipt, even if it's on the bottom of your shopping list, grab it then and then put it into one of your notebooks when you get home and into your computer if you're that organised. All right, I'll talk to you again soon. See ya. Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want more ducky goodness, pop over to the website www.girlandduck.com.
or you can find me on Instagram at Jen E. Storer, J-E-N-E-S-T-O-R-E-R. Bye for now.